Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, June 18th. I'm Ala Kuziz. Illinois has a law requiring hospitals to get patients care after a sexual assault. But for years, hospitals have been sending them to other facilities miles away.
The distance that victims are trying to be sent does more harm than good.
Illinois is attempting to strengthen its law. We'll have an update coming up after this news on The Gateway. Missouri policymakers are raising alarm about how a massive federal budget bill could hurt the state's bottom line. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on how the so-called Big Beautiful Bill could make it harder for states to pay for Medicaid.
The Senate version of a tax cut, immigration, and debt ceiling package would gradually cap medical provider taxes at 3.5%. And the House version would bar states like Missouri from raising the tax, known as the federal reimbursement allowance, that helps pay for Medicaid. GOP House Speaker John Patterson says he's watching what happens in Washington, D.C. closely.
Altering the FRA program that we have or making cuts to Medicaid, that would be devastating to our budgets.
Missouri's medical provider tax is currently at 4.2%, but in the past it's gone up close to 6%. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
The St. Louis Board of Aldermen has sent $30 million in tornado relief to Mayor Kara Spencer for her signature. Members of the board yesterday took less than 30 minutes to approve legislation that directs interest from the RAMP settlement to insurance deductible assistance, housing repairs, and support for nonprofits. Spencer says it'll take a couple of weeks for the city to better understand the gaps that exist in federal and state support.
We do want to be intentional so we're not spending our limited funds on specific needs that can be addressed by these other pools of money.
The federal government is currently accepting applications for individual assistance. State lawmakers approved $100 million in aid, plus a program to help uninsured and underinsured residents. A temporary ban on gender-affirming care for transgender minors could become permanent if Missourians vote to amend the state's constitution. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fenton reports the permanent ban is included in a ballot initiative that would also outlaw most abortions in the state.
Lawmakers this year approved the bill to put a ban to voters in 2026. It would reverse a provision voters approved last year that put the right to abortion in the state's constitution. Lawmakers also added language that outlaws gender-affirming surgeries or cross-sex hormones for transgender people under 18. That ban would not apply to treating hormone imbalances or other disorders in non-transgender minors. State Representative Brian Seitz is one of the bill's handlers.
If a person wants to have these surgeries and or begin the hormonal treatments and so forth, they need to have the cognitive ability to make that decision.
Missouri's already banned such medical treatments for those under 18, but that law expires in 2027. I'm Sarah Fenton, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Steelworkers Union in Granite City says they're hopeful they may soon get an answer on their future. It's expected that Japanese firm Nippon will purchase all U.S. Steel stock this week, finalizing the deal. The American company currently owns Granite City Works in the Metro East. Local union president Craig McKay says it's been stressful waiting for answers these past couple of years.
Even before we know what our ultimate future is going to be, it's a sigh of relief just because we know at least the Nippon saga is behind us, and that sometime relatively in the near future, we're going to understand what it is we're going to be asked to do here in Granite.
Neither U.S. Steel nor Nippon has said anything publicly about their plans for steelmaking in Granite City. People who need emergency assistance in St. Louis County can now reach 911 services by text message. St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports.
Officials say it's still better to call 911 if possible. Response times jump from 2 minutes for a call to 6 minutes for a text. But County Executive Sam Page says texting may sometimes be the best option.
Text to 911 can be an important lifeline for anyone who is deaf or anyone in a public place where speaking safely on the telephone would be would be difficult.
Survivors of domestic violence and anyone else who wants to request emergency help discreetly may also opt to text. Authorities ask texters to describe the problem and include their location and whether or not it's okay for responders to call them back. To use the service, just address a text to 911. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis saw its first orange air quality alert for ozone yesterday. As summer heats up, the potential for unhealthy ozone pollution also increases. Mary Grace Lewandowski is with the East-West Gateway Council of Governments, which tracks local ozone data.
There are a lot of things that the average person can do to reduce the amount of those ozone precursors being released into the atmosphere.
Lewandowski says people can minimize car trips, take public transportation, and avoid using gas-powered lawnmowers on days with ozone alerts. Tomorrow is Juneteenth. The holiday commemorates the end of slavery in the U.S., and it marks the day enslaved people in Galveston, Texas, finally learned they were free, more than 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. The Biden administration declared Juneteenth an official federal holiday 4 years ago. Celebrations for the June 19th holiday kicked off earlier this week and will continue throughout the weekend. Check out stlpr.org/Juneteenth for a list of events in St. Louis, St. Louis County, and the Metro East. Lawmakers have strengthened Illinois' nearly 50-year-old sexual abuse survivors law in an effort to make sure patients get critical care after a sexual assault. The changes come after an investigation last year revealed that dozens of hospitals violated that law. Kate Martin with APM Reports did that reporting and has this update.
Cheryl Thompson was sexually assaulted last year and went to the hospital in Anna, Illinois. She wanted the doctor to collect DNA to prosecute the guy, but she says the doctor didn't believe she was assaulted and didn't offer an exam.
He told me if I wanted a forensic kit, no one in our area did them, and I would have to go 77 miles away to Mount Vernon to a place I didn't know, doctors I didn't know, and a city that I didn't know in order to get one done. Told me that nobody in our area did them.
Time is of the essence to preserve evidence after an assault. 8 days later, Thompson learned there were two hospitals within a 30-minute drive of where she lived. Nobody had mentioned them. She went to one as soon as she could, but
by that time, the DNA was gone.
Without the DNA, there was little chance of prosecuting the man who raped her. Since then, Thompson shared her experience with journalists on social media and with lawmakers in Springfield.
Cheryl Thompson, are you there, Ms. Thompson?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and thank you for...
An existing law requires hospitals to either care for patients after a sexual assault or send them to a hospital that will. Thompson spoke in favor of a bill to strengthen that law. She says she was livid after her experience at the hospital, and she doesn't want anyone else to go through what she did.
I hope that each of you will take into consideration that the distance that victims are trying to be sent does more harm than good, because most of us won't go that distance.
Our investigation last year showed some Illinois hospitals had violated that law hundreds of times, for example, by failing to offer rape kits. We also found some hospitals transferred patients like Thompson as far as 80 minutes away, even though a closer hospital could have treated them. The bill tries to address these issues.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for being with us.
I called Thompson just after lawmakers passed that bill. She hadn't heard the news.
Yeah, and let me interrupt you really quick. The Senate did pass it on the 31st, which was the very end of their legislative session, and now it's going to the governor for signing.
Into words. I am just overwhelmed that it's going to be put into law. That because of what I went through, you know, it kind of makes it worthwhile that something good is coming out of the horrific stuff that I had to go through, so that someone else that comes behind me is not going to have to go through that same thing.
The bill allows the state to fine hospitals that fail to address violations. It also aims to reduce the long transfer times patients like Thompson face. Now the state must consider distance, wait times, and transportation before approving a plan. For the bill to pass, advocates and industry groups had to find common ground. It wasn't easy. Here's Cassie Yarbrough, an assistant VP with the Illinois Health and Hospital Association.
At first, we all came to the table with our own ideas of how this should work, given realistic expectations or what's actually happening in hospital EDs or workforce challenges.
She and a colleague say hearing Thompson's story made it easier to find compromise. Representative Kelly Cassidy, a Democrat from Chicago, has pushed for these changes for more than a year.
Right now, I think we have a pretty great law, and I'm not done making it better.
In an email, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office declined to say if he would sign the bill. He has until the end of July to do so. I'm Kate Martin.
This story comes from APM Reports, an investigative team at American Public Media. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music is by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Arlette Kuziz, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.